Gun sales surge in the nation and here in Maine. There's no way to know for sure how many firearms are sold in total. No way to know how many private sales happen. But all indications are that gun sales are at a record high pace this year since the pandemic started. According to the Brookings Institute, gun dealers in Maine are on track to sell nearly 129,000 firearms this year, the highest number since the FBI began tracking background checks in 1998. Nationally, there's a 45% increase in gun sales over last year and an even higher percentage increase in Maine. Why is this? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will explore the reasons why people are buying guns, people of different political stripes, and more women than before. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Federal statistics show a significant surge in gun sales this year, both nationwide and here in Maine. Today, we will examine why people are buying firearms and who these first-time gun owners are. My guest for the hour, Matt Lang, he is an associate professor of teaching in the Department of Economics at the University of California in Riverside. His most recent research has been focused on the issue of gun ownership. And as always, we want to hear from you. Are you someone who has recently bought a gun for the first time or even considered it? What do you make of this trend? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Matt, I'm so glad you are able to join us for this program, and you've done some really eye-opening research. But I want to step back and ask you, you're a professor of economics. You've done research on things like trade and the effect of health insurance. What made you interested in gun sales?
Oh, boy. Thanks for having me on, Jennifer. And I could talk about that for the entire hour, but I will make it brief and say that my dissertation started looking down the road of mental health and suicide and the determinants and drivers of that. And that naturally led to something like firearms as being a method that takes place or a method to carry that out. So it really got me thinking about that and thinking about just how to measure firearms and got me to where I'm at today, ultimately. So it's been part of my research for quite a while, about 10 years now. So once this pandemic took place, it really gave us an opportunity to start thinking more about what's going on in the gun market and the firearms market and as a reaction to this pandemic. So that's what got me started on this particular project. But yeah,
and I understand you had a personal angle too. You had a friend who bought a gun, and then that surprised you, right?
Well, yeah, it was just talking, we were talking to colleagues, doing different Zoom calls and things like that, and had a friend say, I'm not trying to become a gun advocate or anything, but I'm really worried, and I wonder if I should just buy a gun. And, that was something that kind of struck me. And then one of the last drives my wife and I did before we really kind of like quarantined in like mid-March, we were just driving down the highway and we noticed like the gun shop that we don't really ever notice it, but we actually saw a lineup out the door. And we're like, that seems weird for Southern California. We've never seen that before. And that really kind of made me think, gosh, this seems to be kind of a widespread reaction to this pandemic and the uncertainty and safety concerns surrounding this.
So to summarize what you found out, I read a 45% increase in gun sales this summer compared to the same time last year.
Yeah, that's a way you can think about it. A way to think about it is that there's different expectations and different trends every month, historically when it comes to gun sales. And between February and March, you can say there's a 45% increase above expectations in terms of what we would have seen for gun sales or firearm background checks. So a really marketable rise in March. And then again in June, largely a result or at least related to the social unrest around the protest of George Floyd.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what do you attribute it? Do you attribute it to a general sense of unease or a more specific reason?
Oh, that's a great question. And I really attribute a lot of this to a threat to personal safety. You know, in talking to different people about this and other economists, you know, it's not to make light of the situation, but one of the comments that we got was that, you know, you don't shoot the virus. You know, that's not what's going on here. You're not sitting there saying, like, I'm going to respond to this health concern by getting a gun so I can keep myself safe from the virus. I think it's better. I have a quote here from the American Association for the Advancement of Science. It says, this is an invisible threat. We don't know who is infected and anybody can infect us. We have an uncertain, very uncertain future. We don't know how long it's going to last, and it's no community is safe. And I think people were reacting to the fact that we just don't know what's going on in the future with regards to, you know, institutions. We're shutting down schools. We're shutting down workplaces. Will the police come if we call? If not, are we going to have to protect ourselves? Those types of things, I think a lot of people were feeling, particularly in March, and kind of one of the reactions was to go get some personal protection through guns.
What groups in particular are buying guns at a higher rate than before?
Oh, that's, you know, it's funny because there's been a number of different events that have led to spikes and surges in gun sales. So things like mass shootings, elections, these have been connected to firearm sales. And, you know, in the recent paper, we've identified red versus blue states and said, you know, there's gun policy uncertainty maybe arising from an election, we see bigger surges in red states versus blue states. But what's kind of unique about these recent surges in 2020 is this is a nonpartisan surge. We're seeing this across the board. So states that are the bluest states are increasing gun sales or firearm background checks just as much as states that are furthest to the right or red states. So this is kind of it's a divisive topic. It's a very controversial topic typically, but it turns out that when your health and your safety are threatened, this doesn't seem to differ that much across political lines from what we can see.
And isn't that interesting? So what you're saying is that every 4 years when there's a presidential election, there seems to be a bit of a surge, especially in Republican states, of people buying guns. But that this year, that it doesn't really seem to be as connected to the presidential race, but rather the other factors. And also that as many people who are Democrats are likely buying guns as Republicans.
That's what it seems to be, at least at the aggregate level. So we don't have that personal information. So it very well could be more Republicans in blue states purchasing guns. But that, you know, that in terms of you mentioned first time gun owners or new gun owners in 2020, it doesn't seem like there's as much evidence for that, this kind of like Republicans buying guns in blue states, as there is just kind of this increase in these sales in blue states that are just as high as red states.
I read, Matt, I heard on National Public Radio a week and a half ago, a really interesting story on Weekend Edition about sales among Black families. Is that something that you found in your research, that a greater percentage of people of color were buying guns than were in previous years?
We haven't been able to identify that. That's not something that unfortunately, we can't identify that with the data that we have. But there was a Brookings Institute article back in July that looked at that, and they used the same data and couldn't quite get at the racial differences in terms of firearm purchases, but certainly mentioned that you'd expect there to be safety concerns that differ along racial lines that might induce different individuals to purchase guns that didn't before.
And what about women versus men?
Yeah, so that's, you know, and that's, it's, again, it's a very similar thought process, or at least motivation, as just the overarching idea of safety. So if you're concerned about safety in general, and then that safety concern is heightened for women, we would certainly expect there to be an increase in females owning firearms. And so there's that strong anecdotal evidence for that. And again, it's all under that kind of umbrella of looking for personal safety and trying to find that in this kind of uncertain time.
All right. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation about guns and the surge in gun ownership, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Matt, how many people who are buying these guns are people who already own guns and are buying more guns? And how many are first-time gun owners?
Yeah, that's going to be, that's a great question. And, you know, the background check information, the gun data information I have is aggregated to the state level. So it's hard to, a lot of people who buy guns don't want to give a ton of information about themselves when they're purchasing guns. But, you know, the evidence that I see and that I've seen from different firearm advocacy groups, the NSSF, gun shop owners, they are saying that you're looking at about like a 40% of purchases are from new gun owners. And this, you know, and we have a little bit of evidence, and this is just very, very suggestive in our own work, but we actually looked up different Google search terms, and we see a big spike in the search term for "can I buy a gun?" in 2020. So starting in March 2020, presumably an existing gun owner would know that they can buy a gun, given that they've already done it. So we have this kind of this spike in people searching about whether or not they can purchase a gun. So my data can't actually give you an exact number, but if we kind of corroborate these Google searches and this increase in wanting to know whether you can buy a gun with kind of this 40% increase that gun shop owners and surveys have been saying are new gun owners, it seems like we're looking at about, you know, it's a ballpark figure, one third to one half sounds like a reasonable number.
Sure. Well, on the line with us now is Christine Blake. She and her husband, Jeff, own Liberty Tree Arms Gun Shop in Waldoboro. Thanks so much for joining us, Christine. I understand you've just gotten off an overnight shift as an emergency room nurse, so I really appreciate you calling in.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I'm happy to be here, so not a problem.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your shop and who your typical customers are. Actually, why don't I change that and say who your typical customers used to be and who they are today?
That's a good question. So, we are situated in Waldoboro, Maine, Midcoast, Maine, just off of Route 1. And I want to say our typical customers, I would say gun enthusiasts, collectors, a lot of, you know, even then like female buyers, we just had quite a variety. But since, I want to say, March, that's really changed. The demographic has really changed. We see a lot of first-time buyers. I've seen a lot of, really any demographic coming from all ages, it's amazing to see. I want to say, I don't really have any data or anything to back it up, but I want to say anywhere from like 30 to 50% of our customers who come in, they're probably looking for a first-time gun purchase. And they're looking for training, and they're looking for everything.
And what are they saying to you when they buy the gun? Are they talking about why they've made this decision?
They're concerned about their safety. They're taking their safety into their own hands, safety of themselves, their family, whether it's related to, you know, COVID, rioting, politics, whatever that fear is, it's driving them into gun shops to address their own safety.
Do you have the sense that that Matt has, that these are people from different sides of the aisle politically?
I think so. We're seeing, I think we're seeing quite a mix, whether conservatives, liberals, yes. So a lot of, you know, new questions about, you know, how they work, you know, is training available? Is ammunition available? Like, there's a lot of factors that play into this right now.
Yeah. So what do you think of people becoming first-time gun owners? Do you have precautions or advice for them?
We do. Generally, you know, first-time gun owner, I tend to spend a lot of time kind of in our gun room going over just the basic functioning of whatever firearm they're purchasing. I highly recommend training because practice is huge in firearm ownership. Practice and, safe storage. So I typically, you know, they might take it home. It might stay in the box until they can, like, get a training session with us, which has also been difficult just due to ammo shortages as well. You know, we're seeing shortages of firearms, ammunition, any gun components. It's been a really, really tough place to be right now. We want to provide these services to these first-time people, but it's been difficult.
So interesting. Christine, thank you so much for calling in. Go get some sleep.
And, I'm good.
I really appreciate that. That was Christine Blake, who is co-owner of Liberty Tree Arms in Waldoboro. I'm going to go now to a caller. This is Kelly calling from Sumner. Kelly, I understand you're a firearms instructor.
Yes, I am.
What is your insight on what's going on?
I would agree definitely with Liberty Tree Arms that the majority of students that are coming are across all demographics, all age demographics. We have entire families coming together. They're concerned about their safety, and not necessarily due to what we may see in media with watching riots and things of that nature. I'm in an extreme rural area. Response time for sheriff's department can vary, you know, depending on where they're located in the county. We have lots of an increase in break-ins and things of that nature due to increased substance abuse. We all know substance abuse is a big problem in the state of Maine. I have women who have been victims of domestic violence and have PTSD type related issues. They want to take a course to get over that and so that they can have ownership over their own personal safety. I've had folks that have grown up in war-torn countries who just hear the boom when the gun goes off, and that triggers a post-traumatic reaction. We're able to work through that. I'm a professional therapist for my vocation, so I'm able to kind of weave all that together. My oldest student was 85 years old. She always wanted to target shoot for a sport, and of course, back in the day, ladies should not shoot guns. And she said, I'm 85. I'm going to do what I want to do now. So she comes to class. So it's just a wide variety of reasons. I think the biggest common denominator, much like she said from Liberty Tree Arms, is folks want to learn to use their particular handgun safely. And that's what's driving them to take a class. They all take this very seriously.
Well, Kelly, I so appreciate you calling in. Kelly calling from Sumner, and Kelly is a firearms instructor. Thank you for calling in. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Marshall Communications. With Nancy Marshall's The PR Maven podcast, offering advice on building your brand and network, marshallpr.com. Bangor Savings Bank, celebrating all the ways people all over Maine are making life a little better. Bangor.com/spreadkindness. And the Damerscotta River Grill, open for dine-in and takeout, also serving an expanded prepared foods menu to go. DamerscottaRiverGrill.com.
It took 36 days and a Supreme Court decision before George W. Bush became the 43rd president.
The level of litigation that took place in 2000 was unprecedented.
I'm Elsa Chang. What was unprecedented then might seem quaint after this year's vote. The looming election legal battles this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's coming up later today from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. In this election year, Maine is in the national spotlight more than ever, and Maine Public's nationally recognized political reporting team of Steve Missler and Mal Leary has you covered with the weekly Maine's Political Pulse podcast, available online at mainepublic.org. And now you can also sign up for the new Political Pulse newsletter, which is delivered straight to your inbox on Friday mornings. You can subscribe right now at mainepublic.org/pulse or by clicking the mainepublic.org news dropdown at the top of the page and then select Maine Political Pulse.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the rise in gun ownership, why it's happening and what it looks like in Maine. My guest is Matt Lang. He's an economics professor at the University of California in Riverside and has done a lot of research recently on trends in gun ownership. As always, we want to hear from you. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling. Post a comment on today's Facebook post or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is Jeff Bickford. He is the executive director of the Maine Gun Safety Coalition. Thanks for calling in, Jeff. And I understand that when we try to get a sense of firearm sales in Maine or other places, it's hard to track, that people like Matt are only dealing with a limited database. Why is that?
Yes, thanks so much for having me, Jennifer. I appreciate it. That's exactly right. The issue in Maine particularly is that we don't have an independent background check requirement above and beyond what the federal government requires, which is that there's a FBI background check for those sales conducted with a federal licensed firearm dealer. So that's typically your gun stores like Liberty Tree or a Cabela's or an L.L. Bean. But private sales, like those that are done at a gun show, or those that are an advertised sale in an Uncle Henry's or online, where it's just two people meeting up to for one person to sell the gun and the other person to buy it, there's no FBI background check required. And so the reason we know of this rise, this surge in firearm sales across the country and in Maine, is the number of background check requests that have been made. In Maine, because there are so many sales, and we don't know how many sales, but certainly a significant number of sales that aren't transacted in that venue and don't require background check, we really have no sense of how high the number of sales is in Maine at any given point, and that certainly goes for this recent surge.
All right. Well, I'm going to go to a Facebook comment next, because I know it's one you'd want to speak to, Jeff. Rick on Facebook says, I'm hoping today's conversation will include data on households with guns and injuries or death. Is it true that there's a positive correlation between gun ownership and injuries or death in the home? And if people are going to purchase a gun, what needs to be done to ensure everyone stays safe?
Yeah, that's absolutely true, that there is extensive research, and I'm sure that the professor is familiar with this, that shows a correlation between having a firearm in the home and the likelihood of being injured or killed. A significant part of that comes, and we see this in Maine, unfortunately, all too frequently, is people who fail to store their firearms safely. And this is, although your caller from Liberty Tree and your gun trainer, they spoke very well of the importance of training. There's no requirement in Maine that you get training for a concealed carry permit, to purchase any kind of firearm, to carry a gun out of the store. And so while it's great and very admirable that they offer this training, that people are availing themselves of it, there's no requirement of that. And that includes a requirement for safe storage. And so when people are taking these firearms home, if they don't know what they're doing, they don't know the risks, they don't know the proper methods of storing it safely, there's a risk of, especially with children, coming across the weapon and using it either accidentally or certainly we've seen a tremendous surge in teenage firearm-related suicides. Unfortunately, we had an incident not too long ago in the state with a 16-year-old. There are several reasons for that correlation between the rise of the incidence of firearm deaths or injuries and firearm presence in the home, but a very large part of that, especially in Maine, is this risk that people just don't know what they're doing when they walk out of the gun store with a gun.
Right. And so let me ask you this. Is Maine an outlier, or is it, do most states not have some sort of requirement? I'm thinking about when I get my, you know, when 16-year-olds or 17-year-olds or 18-year-olds first get their driver's license, they have to pass a driver's test. There's nothing like that in Maine. Is there anything like that in other states?
Sure, yeah. A lot of our surrounding states or fellow New England states have requirements for safe store, for concealed carry, for possession of a long gun, possession of a pistol. So that is not rare. Maine is certainly an outlier in that respect, especially regionally. And you're right. I mean, that's a very troubling aspect of our law, is that you can't drive off of a used car lot or new car lot without having a license that says, I know how to operate this thing. But you can, as long as you don't have a background check issue come up, if you're buying a gun from a federally licensed firearm dealer, you can walk out of a gun store if you're of age with a firearm with no proof that you know how to operate it or use it safely. And I think that's particularly troubling as we're hearing about the correlation of the rise of gun sales with the sense that people are going to anticipate using them defensively for whatever reason that may be in this recent surge. You know, it's one thing to know how to operate a firearm safely for hunting or for even just storing it around the house. It's another to, is an entire different issue when you're talking about how to use a firearm and when to use it properly in a defensive situation. And again,
sure.
There's no
Jeff, before we move on, I want to ask you what you recommend for anyone looking for information or classes on the safe use of firearms. Is there a good website to find something near you?
I would check the with your gun dealer. A lot of these gun dealers do offer trainings, and if not, they'll know who to go to. But I would advise anyone, especially a first-time purchaser who's purchasing a firearm for any reason, to be fully trained, know what you're doing, know how to operate it, know how to store it safely, take the course, and take it seriously.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Jeff Bickford, who's Executive Director of the Maine Gun Safety Coalition. I'm going to go to Scott, who's calling from Thomaston. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, we are new gun owners. And, well, I'll preface this with saying that we are politically, we're about as left of the scale as we can possibly be. And we have signs out at the end of our driveway indicating our political opinions. And people have driven by and yelled things and thrown things and honked their horns at unreasonable hours. But so my wife is leading the charge on arming the household. So she has bought a shotgun to begin with, and she's working on her concealed carry permit to the extent that we're taking a safety course this weekend. I mean, I'm a very local and grew up in a household of deer hunting and target shooting, so I know my way around a rifle. But anyway, this I think we perfectly fit the demographic of people that are watching the potential collapse of American society and getting ready for that.
So you're afraid because of your liberal beliefs.
Yes.
You know, you're not the only one.
Yeah,
Jason posted on Facebook, since I had a Trumper threaten to kill me because I speak my mind, I have also bought one. So not alone.
No, we're absolutely not. In fact, a friend of ours teaches gun safety, and that's who we're taking the course with this weekend. And he's actually calling it the Armored Snowflake Course.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Scott, thank you so much for calling. Matt, is what Scott says and what our Facebook post says, is this information that you're hearing as well, sort of on a higher, you know, looking at a different kind of scale?
Yeah, because this aligns quite amazingly, actually, with the aggregated data. So the data that we have is just the state level. And when I think it was Jeff talking about even the trends in Maine, for example, like the big jump in Maine in terms of background checks, like they doubled between February and March. But it's really what we just have the state data. We just have what goes on in every state. But the fact that this is happening throughout the country suggests that, like, the median person in each state is kind of representative of the political leanings. And if they're new gun owners, first time gun owners, it really seems like we just have an across the board increase in firearm ownership. And the reasons kind of, you know, generally seem to go back to health and safety and personal safety, and whether that's because you're feeling threatened by somebody who's on the other side of the aisle, or you're worried about, I think it was Christine mentioning being out in the rural area and not sure how long it's going to take to get support and needing to take care of yourself and have that personal protection. All that aligns with what we find. Absolutely.
All right, we'll move on to Jeff, who's calling from Skowhegan. Jeff, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I think it's along the lines of the last caller. I'm a pacifist. I've always been a pacifist. I'm a Democrat. Everything that you're seeing happening right now and what we're hearing with the scenarios that have been playing out as to what could happen at the election and after has made my wife and I think about getting a gun, first time ever. I don't like guns. I hate guns. And I think that's where we are right now. And I think you're only going to see an increase in gun ownership. And if the election doesn't play out as we hope it normally would, I think you're going to see a lot of Wild West attitudes in many states, rural states, urban states.
Well, Jeff, let me read to you a Facebook post and tell me if you feel the same way. This is William. He writes, I purchased a firearm because of the significant increase in hateful rhetoric that is right out in the open in 2020. Hate groups have been emboldened by the political direction our country is in, and it makes me concerned for the safety of myself and my peers.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, Matt?
Yes.
Oh, it's discouraging, isn't it? Jeff,
well,
Jeff,
yeah,
thank you.
You know, I think it really is. Yeah, it's definitely, again, it across the board is what we've thought of since March. And, you know, again, I go back to talking with having similar conversations in March as you're having today, saying, you know, I'm worried. I'm worried about a lot of things, and I think I need protection.
I'll go to Mike, who's calling from Unity. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I just wanted to chime in. I thought this was an interesting discussion, and I'm a 38-year-old expatriated New Yorker. My wife and I moved up to Maine in April. We put that in motion before all the COVID. We actually purchased a home up here in December. We didn't make it up until April, but we bought two guns this summer. And largely because we're concerned about the failure of the institutions around us. The rioting is certainly driving it, but from our perspective, the discussions about guns, and I don't want to move it towards politics, but they're inextricably sort of intertwined. What we feel is happening is that a lot of the rioting and unrest that we see, there's more going on than it's not just about race, in our opinion. And I think that opinion is shared by a lot of people. And we're not quite sure what it is about, but it's very unnerving. And the potential for violence, especially after the upcoming election, sort of pushed us to arm ourselves.
And what did you buy? What kind of guns?
One 9mm handgun and one AR-15 rifle.
And why did you make that choice for those two?
Just for tactical reasons. I have a hunting rifle. So while I'm not a first-time gun owner, I've had a hunting rifle which was left to me by my grandfather years ago. I can count on one hand how many times I've used it over the years, although back in New York, there aren't a whole lot of places where you can fire it. I probably would have used it more if I had more space. But because if there's a situation where there's a mob of people or we have to defend our ourselves on our property, those are the weapons that make the most sense. I would never take that rifle off the property. There's no reason for it to leave the end of my driveway. But that's the answer.
Mike, thank you so much for calling in. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to David Trahan from the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine. We're also looking forward to your call. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Livingston Hughes Surveyors. Full-service land surveying for homeowners, title companies, and mortgage lenders throughout Maine. LivingstonHughes.com. And Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice, providing home care, hospice, and palliative care, and now telehealth. Androscoggin.org.
On September 17, 2006, the Portland Sea Dogs captured their first Eastern League championship in franchise history. The Sea Dogs defeated the Akron Arrows, AA affiliate of the Cleveland Indians, 8-5 at Hadlock Field to take the best-of-five series 3-2. Following the game, Eastern League president Joe McCurkin presented the Sea Dogs with the Eastern League championship trophy and announced that Portland outfielder Brandon Moss was named the Eastern League Playoff Most Valuable Player and presented him with the MVP trophy for his outstanding efforts. Moss hit .361 in the playoffs with 5 home runs and 10 RBIs.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of DN Wealth Advisors and the Maine Seacoast Mission. Happy birthday, Maine! The Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus is on a twice-a-week schedule on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On these 2 days, it will normally happen at about 2 o'clock each weekday afternoon. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, the briefings are archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and others is normally scheduled for Tuesdays and Thursdays each week and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today's topic, a surge in gun sales in Maine and across the country. Why people are turning to guns and what we need to consider. Matt Lang is an economics professor at UC Riverside and has been examining trends in U.S. gun ownership and what it says about our society. He's our guest for the hour. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now, David Trahan, Executive Director of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine. Thanks so much for calling in, David.
Good afternoon, Jennifer. Thanks for the invite.
Tell us what you're observing in terms of gun sales and interest in gun ownership. Does it go along with what others have said so far in the program?
Well, I don't know about the other folks on the program, but my observations have been very similar, that more and more people are looking at purchasing firearms. We see it with a real ammo shortage. We see it with a spike in background checks. So, yeah, I think more people are buying firearms. But I think an important point might be, like in my case, I'm a firearm owner. I have multiple firearms that have been left to me by family members and others. Does it really matter if I have one firearm or 10 firearms? Really, you can only use one at a time. So a little bit of this might be overblown for individuals who already own firearms. Buying another one is not a disturbing trend. It just, it might be people who've said, well, I've always wanted this type of firearm for this type of hunting or for self-defense, and I'm going to go out and get it before I can't get it. And so I think there's a little of that going on. I also think that there are some national fears. When you turn the TV on and you see gangs of individuals that are burning businesses, you know, it's scary and people feel powerless. So I'm not going to judge them for going out and purchasing a firearm. I think if people want to defend themselves, then they have a right to do that. My only issue is learn how to use firearms properly and safely, and we encourage that. Our organization works heavily in the firearm safety community. So
yeah, and that's what I wanted to ask you about. We were talked to Christine Blake earlier from Liberty Tree Arms Gun Shop, that she was talking about that she felt like sort of on an instinctive to talking with her customers that a good portion of them were indeed first-time gun buyers. What is your advice for a new gun owner?
Well, I think my number one piece of advice is that when you purchase a firearm, you're responsible for that firearm and what happens with it. And that's a heavy responsibility that every single person who purchases a firearm, whether an experienced firearm individual or people who are first-time buyers, with that comes an equal responsibility to go out, learn how to do it properly, learn how to do it safely, and always recognizing that when the bullet comes out of the end of the gun, you can never take that back. And that's a heavy burden for all of us that are firearm owners to think about and really to live that life. Once you've decided to own firearms, comes vigilance and responsibility.
David, I'm going to ask you a question that came in by email. This is from Paul. He writes, similar to driver education, every gun owner upon purchase would have 30 days to complete a mandatory gun safety course. It could be written or online with a quiz, retake test every 6 years. Does the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine endorse having some sort of state law that would require a gun safety course?
Well, that's a very, very slippery slope, and I'll tell you why. There's no constitutional rights where you have to take a course to exercise them. And I would turn this right back on you, Jennifer, and imagine what it would be like if somebody said, before you can exercise your First Amendment right to free speech, you have to take a course. So that is one where we strongly encourage education. Matter of fact, we provide serious amounts of resources to do that for hunters, for gun owners. I mean, talking hundreds of thousands of dollars that we've invested in firearm safety. So a very slippery slope to require some sort of education class. But what I do think is important and something that most listeners who have never owned a firearm, when you go into a gun shop and you buy a firearm, they will give you information where you can get your proper training. Many of them offer classes. Some will give you some standard operating procedures for your firearm right then and there in the store. But what I would say is if you're considering buying a firearm, go to a firearm dealer who will point you in the right direction. And I strongly encourage it, but I don't think we want to start mandating classes to exercise your constitutional rights.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the conversation, David. That was David Trahan, who is Executive Director of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine. So many calls coming in. We'll go to Hannah, who's calling from the Mid-Coast. Hi, Hannah. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, you know, hunting, I've done it in the past, and I totally think that using firearms for that is fine. But as a way to protect myself, I don't really agree with. I'm a young woman who lives on the Mid-Coast. I don't think that I need to protect myself in any sort of a way with a gun. I think pepper spray would be a way to do it. But maybe that's just my naiveness or, you know, living in a rural setting. But the consequences of using a gun just seem so dramatic. And if that is what you want to do, protecting yourself, there are other ways to think.
Hannah, thank you so much for calling in and giving that perspective. And Matt, I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about that, that one does not need to purchase a firearm to protect oneself.
That's a totally fair thought and a fair opinion. And it's, you know, kind of in the spirit of David a little earlier saying you don't want to like step on anybody's rights. You know, if Hannah thinks that there's a better way to protect herself that keeps her safe, that is absolutely true. And I think that's where I can't really give you a reason why one particular individual may buy a gun. All we can say is that it seems that this kind of concern about personal safety has led to this surge in gun sales, and people who find other ways to keep themselves safe, you know, that's certainly a great way to to operate it. Anybody has any right to do that? Absolutely. So, yeah.
Hannah, thank you for your call. We'll move on to Belfast and Tyler. Hi, Tyler. Go ahead.
A great way. I'll take my answer off air. But my question was, I guess my comment first is I support local businesses, local sportsmen who hunt and, pump money into the economy by buying guns and ammunition. And, I was a resident of Brewer, and I was very saddened to see one of the sports shops close there recently after being there a long time. So I get it, and I'm all for responsible owners. I guess as my fear is, we're talking about fears, is the man who called who said they moved from New York, moving to Maine intentionally, and proceeded to say he bought guns because he was afraid people were going to come and take things from him or his family or hurt them on his property. I guess my first thought, as somebody who has, known about mental health stuff and have worked in mental health, I guess why isn't it a concern for people that one's first thought isn't if they're experiencing paranoia to seek some sort of mental help? I mean, there are many people who walk around every day and there is no threat of home invasion. It blows my mind that people would take such a drastic view on something that so many probably see as somewhat of a mental illness. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Tyler. And Matt, do you have any thoughts about Tyler's insight?
I mean, it's certainly something to be aware of, and it actually it's related to what was said earlier about just the general risk that comes with owning firearms with regards to suicide risk, which is something I've found, accidental gun deaths, things like that. So, going down this path is certainly something of a purchasing a gun is certainly something that comes with a lot of responsibility. So, I think Tyler has a great point that, this idea of saying I'm concerned and feel unsafe, I have to go buy a gun. That's not the only way to enhance your safety. And if there's mental illness involved with this, I think that's a totally different episode of Maine Calling. Cause there's definitely resources that we can put towards mental illness and mental health, that to me is almost a completely different subject.
And you've done research on that as well. I know we have an email here from Ed. Whatever the reason people buy guns, some dots need to be connected. First, more guns mean more loss of life. Some here as a result of the illusion that personal safety is enhanced by having a gun, but many more in our inner cities. Second, an episode like that in Kenosha, Wisconsin carries equally sinister implications. A predominantly white and heavily armed militia of self-proclaimed Christian patriots proposed to help suppress protests in an African-American community. It's no great leap to find a symptom of systemic racism. And Matt, I'm not going to ask you to speak to Ed's comment specifically, but just generally, it seems as though this trend, this number, these numbers of gun purchases are reflecting all sorts of societal fears, but also all sorts of touch points right now in our culture.
Yeah, and I've said for along a lot of dimensions, actually, that since this pandemic started, it really just it exacerbates a different personality characteristics and different feelings, because it's I think it's really causing all of us to look at ourselves a little bit more, whether it's, because of the surrounding events or because we're quarantined more. And an example I use is I tend to talk fast. And so when I was teaching online, I talked even faster. But when it comes to trying to protect yourself or kind of your response to this, all we can really say is that, whether people have a strong rationale for buying guns or not buying guns, we can't speak to that. All we can speak to is that the overarching reaction is that this time period, 2020, has led to this incredible surge And the reasons are multifaceted. And we can talk about personal safety. We can talk about riots. We can talk about elections. All those things are leading to this incredible surge. And just to kind of give you some more numbers, we're going to end up, if we don't increase our firearm background checks more for the rest of the year, we're going to still have about 30% more firearm background checks in 2020 than in 2019, if they just stayed at 2019 numbers for the rest of the year.
An email here from Greg. It is sad to hear of so many new purchases. More guns in any country leads to more mass shootings. We have more per capita than any other country over Yemen and Afghanistan. Training won't solve this. Restricting access won't end deaths. We need to reduce the number of guns, period, or suffer more death. Some surprising countries have done a better job, Somalia and Iraq, to name two. Try to squeeze in a call or two. We'll go to Bruce in Saco. Bruce, if you can be quick, that would be great.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to make a couple points here. I have to say right up front, I'm a left-leaning moderate, but I do own a lot of guns. I've had them all my life. I've also had a fair amount of military training as a pilot, not a gun owner, a gun user, I should say, but that's a little different, but still falls in the same line. I'm a little concerned about all the guns ending up in households that have no training. And a good example is my brother called me up recently. He wanted, advice on getting armed. And I was like, why? And he says, well, I got to protect myself. I said, you know what? You have no training. Somebody comes into your house, they're going to have training. You're not going to survive. So I don't think it's a good idea. I try to advise him against buying a gun. And today I'm seeing pickup trucks today. I'm out driving around with banners in their rear window now saying Redneck Nation. This just popped up. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is like a powder keg we're on right now. People just waiting to ignite it. And everybody's getting armed. It's just a matter of time before something really bad occurs. It explodes, and it's not going to be good. And I don't know, it's cat's out of the bag. There's too many guns in the system anyway. You'll never take them back. They're already out there, so you can't fix it that way. But we need to tone down all this rhetoric going on right now. That's the problem. We didn't have this issue 4 years ago, and
Bruce, I think
now.
Yeah, I think that your feelings, your very articulate expression of your feelings represent what many people are feeling right now. You are going to be the last comment. Believe it or not, we're out of time. I want to thank Matt Lang for joining us for the entire hour. He's Associate Professor of Teaching in the Economics Department at the University of California in Riverside. On our website, we'll have a link to some of his research. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Today's program will be rebroadcast at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay with us for the Maine CDC briefing with Director Nirav Shah. That is next on radio, television, Facebook, and our website. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.